is a guy that thinks he's fly and is also known as a buster. Always talking about what he wants and just sits on his broke ass soul. No, I don't want your number. No, I don't wanna give you mine. And no, I don't wanna meet you nowhere. No, don't want none of your time. And no.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. And a few hours ago, the Green Bay Packers were defeated by the Detroit Lions 30-17 at Lambeau Field. The game was not as close as that score would indicate. It was fairly one-sided, and the Packers have now lost three games in a row to drop to 4-4. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast, and here to break everything down with me is Tom Silverstein. So, Tom, let's start with the Packers offense, and how did you think it was going to look after 15 days off, and what did you think of the end result?
let me choke down this peanut M&M first.
Halloween candy.
Yeah. I'm stealing it from Ryan Wood. He doesn't know it. What did I think the offense would look like? I wasn't sure, but I thought it would feature more Aaron Jones than it did. I saw in practice this week that they were working on a lot of spread stuff, that they looked to be doing some read option and jet sweeps and stuff. But what it turned out to be was just this hodgepodge, like Mike McCarthy trying to find something that Brett Hundley could do. And I don't think he ever found what it was. You can't live by spread offense alone in the NFL. He did it for a while, had a little bit of success with it, but really, you know, it was the end of the half. The Lions just didn't want to give up a touchdown. So, in all, I thought it was a disaster. I thought they just had nothing to hang their hat on. Hundley is... I had doubts about him in training camp, and I still have doubts about him. I have more doubts about whether he can be any good. You know, most of the yards he got was in garbage time. And I never saw one thing that they said, okay, at least can do this. I never saw it.
No, I agree with you. And I think, first of all, I was surprised just at the playing time distribution between Montgomery and Aaron Jones. I mean, mm-hmm. You touched on it a little bit, but if you had told me that, you know, we don't have the snap counts yet, but I'm sure Montgomery played more snaps than Aaron Jones did. They had the same number of carries, both with five. Aaron Jones caught two passes for minus 1 yard, and Montgomery had one catch for 18 yards. Yeah. I don't know if it's stubbornness on the part of the coaches to continue sticking with Montgomery because they essentially dedicated the offseason to him, but I was very surprised. And for Aaron Jones to only have five carries after playing as well as he had, especially with the first-string offensive line all healthy at the start of the game, that was a little surprising to me. And as for the passing game, I agree with you. The only time that they gained any yards was at the end of the first half and the end of the second half, and in both of those situations, they sort of went into their no-huddle, up-tempo kind of stuff. But what you got to remember about that is the amount of freedom that Hundley has in those situations is going to be significantly different than the amount of freedom that Rodgers would have in the same scenario. So the sustainability of that offense, or that at least that type of offense, I think is far less than what you would get with Rodgers. You know, you can almost go the majority of a game in no huddle with Rodgers. I don't think you can do that with Hundley because he's not going to recognize the same things at the line of scrimmage. He's not going to be able to make the checks. And I agree with you. I think it was just a calamity on offense to the point where I have no idea who on that offense can have confidence in what at this point.
Yeah. I thought they went with Montgomery more in the, when they decided they were going to go spread,
right?
Because he's more of a receiver. He also can create some mismatches, or, you know, if they go dime defense, he can play running back. But early on, they went two tight ends to start and tried to run Jones a little bit, and Detroit kind of stopped that up. But I never saw them just go to more traditional offense. Where I thought Detroit was willing to sit back a little bit with two safeties back, and at least the times I saw it, I got to look at it more closely, but I saw opportunities to run the ball, and they just – that was not in the game plan to run the ball. I'm not sure why, other than they wanted to get Hundley going. I know early on they played through a lot of short stuff, rhythm stuff, but he never really got going.
No, and another thing about the running game, too, is that on the first drive they used a little bit of zone read, which is something they hadn't done a ton of with Hundley. It actually worked pretty well. He handed it off once for, I think, a 4 or 5 yarder, and then he kept it twice for, you know, what did he finish with rushing-wise? 33 yards, and then you never saw it again, really, the rest of the game, maybe once or twice. And so, you know, again, I think when Hundley took over for Rodgers in Minnesota, we said after the game on that podcast that it probably wouldn't be until after the Detroit game that we would have an idea of what the offense would look like, because you'd have 1 week to prepare with Hundley for the Saints, then you'd have the bye week, and then you'd get another full week to prepare. I have no idea what this offense is about, and I have no idea what it's going to look like when they line up in Chicago next week.
No, and to me, time is running out. I mean, you know, they're not going anywhere anyway, but if, you know, at some point, if they can't find something that he does well, then they got to go with someone else. And McCarthy, once again, expressed supreme confidence in Hundley and kind of, to me, I thought he was laying the loss on the footstep of the defense.
A little bit.
Which I can buy. You know, they were terrible. But you're not going to win scoring 10 points. And I know they scored
17.
But, you know, the last touchdown didn't really matter. You can't expect your defense to hold someone to 10 points.
So if Hundley continues to play poorly and just basically shows that he can't play at this level or can't be effective enough at this level to win football games, where does the blame fall for that? Do you put it more on the scouting department for identifying and sticking with a player that just is not capable of doing it? Or do you put it on the coaches because Hundley has the traits to do well and the coaches are not finding ways to allow him to succeed?
I don't think you can necessarily put it on the coaches. I mean, I guess you can. I don't think you can put Hundley's development as a quarterback, you know, with the blame with the coaches. I think finding the offense for him to run, if he's capable, then that would be their problem. But I've thought all along that they were gambling going with him as their backup and that they needed a third option.
I agree.
And I'll still go, you know, and I might be wrong, but I'm still going to say that the biggest mistake they made was getting rid of Taysom Hill. He wasn't going to be a savior, but he's a pro body with a guy who could run with a pro arm. And they didn't even give themselves a chance by letting him go. So maybe Hundley will turn it around. Maybe they'll find something. But right now, I don't see it.
If they lose to the Bears, they drop to 4-5. And at that point, I think their season would
be
0-3
in the division.
Exactly. I think they'd be 1-1. They beat the Bears in September.
Oh, that's right.
So they'd be 1-4 in the division.
Four.
Or 1-3. 1-3. Excuse me. So at that point, they'd be 4-5 overall, 1-3 in the division. And I think at that point, even by wild card standards, their season would be over.
Yeah.
So if they lose to the Bears on Sunday, am I crazy for wanting to see Joe Callahan? Throw him in there. See what happens when your season's over. What if he does something?
I suppose. I mean, I don't have much confidence in him either, but
at least he would – I don't know. Callahan just – he strikes me as a gamer.
Yeah, yeah. He at least – I don't know. He is a passing quarterback. And Hundley, you know, Hundley has some tools, but I just don't know what his strength is. You know, Callahan I know can – you know, he can hit a lot of timing stuff and you know, maybe he could move the team. But at what point next week, next Sunday, if they haven't scored a touchdown against the Bears, do you just say, we got to do something, you got to put Callahan in the game?
No, I agree with you. That's to me the interesting question in all this is, when will McCarthy swallow the pride and make the change if Hundley doesn't work? I don't know if he will, but I think it's a point you have to discuss. You know, sort of related to that, you know, you've covered the JerMichael Finleys, you've covered the Donald Drivers, you've covered the guys that have a little bit of an edge to them, or a hint of a diva quality to the way that they approach this. So far, the Devontae Adams, Randall Cobbs, and Jordy Nelsons of the world have said all the right things in support of Hundley. And even today, on the deep ball that Hundley may have overthrown or may not have overthrown, Adams said, "No, that was on me. I misjudged it. I should have caught it." One of the early shots that they had deep down the sideline. How long can a group of receivers continue to button up and not express frustration? Because there has to be frustration.
Yeah, not very long. Receivers are divas, and they, when they don't get the ball, they get frustrated. And, you know, it's one thing for them not to get the ball because the quarterback is choosing to throw to someone else and successfully. It's another when the quarterback can't get the ball to them. And that's kind of the case right now. I was glad to hear that Adams took the blame for that, because he should have stuck his other hand out there and made an attempt. So at least he owned that. But, you know, I mean, Hundley, I see him, like, locked in on his receiver and not really going through his progressions, at least from what I can tell. I'm not an expert. I'm not a quarterback's coach. But a couple times he was just locked in on Nelson, it looked like to me. And you kind of want to see him scan the field and stay in the pocket a little bit, you know. Stay in there and trust your offensive line a little, too. He's really quick to bail. And I think that comes from watching Rodgers, who bails early, but it's because he can make a play out there. Hundley can't make a play on the run. He's not shown that he can make a play on the run. And so it's almost like he's trying to be Rodgers, and that's not his game. He shouldn't try to do that.
I'm looking at the box score here, and it has the long reception for all the receivers. And, you know, Cobb had the longest play with 46, but that was a massive catch and run. Mm-hmm. Then you look at Jamal Williams, who had another big catch and run on a dump down. Same with Montgomery. I don't know what the longest pass was that traveled in the air.
Kendricks probably. He threw that one deep down the – well, not deep down the middle, but it was a shot down the middle.
So my point is that, you know, we can think of one pass that probably sailed 15 yards in the air or more. And he threw 38 passes.
Yeah, that's incredible.
He completed 26 passes, the exact same number as Stafford, and he had 116 fewer yards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did throw some deep ones. I mean, he threw the one to Adams. He threw deep down the sideline to Nelson. I mean, it was deep as, you know, one way to put it. He threw a couple of 20-yarders, but he didn't. Not very much. A lot of it was short stuff. And I'm still really amazed that he completed 26 of 38. It seemed to me like he threw a lot more incompletions than that.
So what do you do if you're McCarthy? Do you keep trying to find new things and draw up things that you haven't tried before? Or do you just think that with more work and more practice and more polish that the stuff you've been doing with Hundley will work?
Well, you know, if your defense was playing halfway decent, then you could do what the Bears are doing, which is, you know, Trubisky, just don't lose the game for us.
And we'll run the ball.
And we'll run the ball, and we'll rely on our defense, and we'll stay in every game. But McCarthy doesn't have that. I mean, that defense was pathetic. And so he's got to try to score points. I mean, he can't sit there and go double tight end and run the ball the entire game now. I thought maybe they could, because I actually thought the defense might bounce back a little once it got healthy. But that's not going to happen. And, you know, they got more problems. They got Brian Bulaga. Looks like he could have a serious knee injury. That's going to hurt. I don't know what happened to Justin McCray.
He has an ankle injury and said he was fine, but, you know, guys have said that before.
Yeah. really just a mess. Just a total mess.
So let's flip over to the other side of the ball. And I guess we can just sort of, I'll ask you the elephant in the room right away. Does Dom Capers finish the year as defensive coordinator for the Packers?
Well, you know, if it were me after a game like this, I would consider making a move just because you're at a key moment in the season. And if you think that there's a chance Aaron Rodgers could come back, then you make that move because you got to get something. You got to shake something up because you can't – you look at what happened Monday night, and to me it looked like they were just out-coached. And I almost never say that. I believe it comes down to players. Players determine outcomes. But in this case, Detroit didn't answer for everything the Packers did. They were a step ahead of Green Bay the entire game, and that's embarrassing for a team that was back at full strength and had 2 weeks to prepare.
Now, let's say that McCarthy did decide to make a move or, you know, wanted to go in another direction. Is that 100% McCarthy's call? Or if McCarthy said, look, I want to stick with Capers, could Ted come in and say no, goodbye?
Yes and yes.
Okay, so McCarthy can make the choice to fire him, or Ted Thompson can make the choice to fire him. Okay, and so I don't know if he'll do it or not, but I kind of agree with you. You know, I remember my first year here was 15, and that was a season where there were some horrific defensive performances down the stretch leading into the playoffs. And there were a couple players on that team that talked sort of out of the corners of their mouth in hushed tones after the cameras disappeared about how they were frustrated with some of the stuff that Capers was calling or the way that the game was being called. And I don't remember the exact reasons for that, but we're starting to see similar performances now, and I wonder if there is any element of guys just not believing in what Capers is doing at this point.
Yeah, I got that sense from a couple of guys, you know, and not being able to defend what they were doing. Now, you know, some of these guys need to play a lot better. But I just got the sense, you know, I thought Capers did what he should do, which was blitz Stafford, put some pressure on him. He finally had his secondary back, you know, bring some heat. And he did. And it seemed to me like Detroit knew exactly where it was coming from. And they blocked it up every single time. I mean, there was not a free runner at Stafford the entire day. And if you're going to blitz that much, you better – I mean, once in a while, you got to have a guy come in there and hit him. And he had one hit. Matthews got him down once. That was it. And then we had a sack on a – we saw a sack on a flea flicker.
Right.
So that's ridiculous for the amount of pressure that he tried to put on there. And so either Nick Perry, Mike Daniels, Clay Matthews are all washed up and you might as well cut them all, or something's wrong.
And don't forget, the Lions started this game on their third string left tackle.
Yeah.
Because you have Taylor Decker, who begins the year on PUP. Then you have the former number two overall pick, Greg Robinson, goes down. Mm-hmm. So they have a converted defensive lineman playing left tackle. Mm-hmm. He misses a couple plays, and mm-hmm. they still couldn't really get anywhere.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh had destroyed
yep.
Glasgow and Swanson. And today those guys are all pros, you know. I mean, T.J. Lang played his butt off. He was dominant. And you know that was in the making. And I don't know if he somehow inspired those other guys to play above it, but if that wasn't an up yours to Ted, I don't know what is, because he was, you know, a rock in the middle there. Daniels couldn't get a sniff against him.
I definitely want to go back and look at the game again to see the types of blitzes that Capers called, but I just have this image in my head where I felt like I saw the same blitz five or six times, and it was Morgan Burnett and Demaryius Randall both coming, and Kyler Fackrell or one of the outside linebackers dropping. Now, they might have been coming from different angles, but I just felt like those two guys were the only ones blitzing when I think about what kinds of pressure Capers called. Now, I don't know if that's predictable. I don't know if that was something that the Lions saw at once and then they realized, okay, well, we just have to stop this and there's no other way to do it. But I kind of lean more and more toward the fact that Mike Daniels is wildly overrated at this point based on what he's done, especially because he has a guy next to him, Kenny Clark, that's playing his tail off this season, and he still can't get anything done from a pass rush standpoint. And I don't know enough about guys coming off the edge to make an assessment about whether or not the moves aren't working or anything like that, but it just seems to me that with the rare exception, Clay Matthews does not have the ability to line up down in and down out and be a guy you can count on.
I'm going to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
I think Matthews is still, you know, he's not what he was. He's definitely not what he was. He's not going to get 11 sacks anymore. But I think he's been more disruptive than Perry has been.
Okay.
Perry, to me, has been a huge disappointment.
That's fair.
He led the team in sacks last year. And even with the club, he was pretty good rushing the passer. And he's the one who went up against Mahalik, and there were some double teams on him, but he's just I don't see anything from him. I mean, I'll go and look at it again. If I'm wrong, I'll admit it, but I don't see much happening with him, and I don't see much happening with Daniels. Matthews, you know, for what he's paid, yeah, he should have a lot more sacks, but I still think he at least creates some kind of pressure, some kind of you know, he forces the action a little bit, and he's still a pretty decent run player.
So I wrote about the third down conversions that Detroit had offensively. And Detroit came into the game, I think it was 21st in the league in third down conversion percentage at around 37%. Mm-hmm. They converted 8 of 13.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, or excuse me, 2 weeks ago, New Orleans was 8 of 15.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vikings were pretty bad at 4 of 12. But if you put all three of those together, it's still exactly 50%, 20 of 40, which is bad, really bad. And then I looked at the conversions that Detroit had. 3rd and 14, they convert on a penalty by Mike Daniels. 3rd and 10, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 5. So of their 8 third down conversions, 6 of them were 3rd and 5 or more.
Yeah, 5 were 3rd and 7 or more, and 3 were
3rd and 10 or more. And so, you know, I don't know if it's a combination of poor coverage and lack of pass rush or if the secondary is that bad, but I mean, it just feels routine now where there's going to be at least 3 or 4 third and 10 pluses that get picked up.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it anymore.
There's no coordination between pass rush and coverage. And I don't know if that's just because their pass rushers are so bad or because there's no variation in what they're doing with pressure. We know they're not doing anything with their front when they just have four rushing, they're not really getting there.
Nothing.
So they do have to blitz. I don't know. It must be stale, or other teams must really have a good bead on it because they're not getting anything.
One question that I got on the live blog at halftime when I filled in on the chat for a few minutes there was, is the Nitro defense a failure at this point? And I don't really know, because schematically, or like what it's designed to do, if you just plug X's and O's in for guys rather than actual people, I like the concept of it a lot. And I don't really know if it's working or not, but I kind of think it's a fair question at this point, because I don't know what their alternative really would be, but
I would be questioning it if they were giving up huge chunks of yardage on the ground.
In the run game, yeah.
You know, now they did against New Orleans, but New Orleans was beating them all over the place. And Detroit didn't really run the ball that well. Abdullah had some nice setups, and, you know, they had some nice, jet sweep fakes and things like that. But it wasn't it wasn't dominant. So I thought they that defense served them well. I think Josh Jones was a liability.
Absolutely.
In the deep safety. He hadn't played enough there. You know, I'm kind of surprised they didn't switch and then move Burnett back and Jones up, because Jones has just not played enough deep safety. He was trained at that nitro position. As much as you like having Morgan Burnett near the line of scrimmage, I think I'd rather have him deep the way their corners are playing.
I agree. And, you know, the corner position, too, was, you know, back at full strength. They had Kevin King on one side, and I thought Kevin King actually played a decent game with the exception of, I think, maybe one catch that I thought, you know, he gave up. But, I mean, he still tackles really solidly in the flats, and he's not afraid to hit guys. And on the other side was Devon House, and I don't know how he played collectively, but there were a couple catches that he gave up where he was in almost a perfect position, and Stafford just, you know, laced the ball in there.
Yeah.
And then they had Demaryius Randall in the slot. At this point in the year, that is the best trio of corners they have. And they still gave up 365 yards.
Yeah, yeah. So something's wrong. I didn't see Clinton Dix near a ball all day.
That's what I was just about to look up, is to see if he did anything.
Josh Jones, that one play, I can't remember. It was one of the third downs. I think it was third and 14. And he's playing back in Howard, you know? I mean, that's how deep he was playing.
And that's the one they converted to Marvin Jones, right?
Yeah, right down the middle.
Yep.
And he's so afraid. You know, you're supposed to be playing at the sticks, and I don't know what happened there. But he didn't play very well.
And then you look at – this is another interesting thing that Devon House brought up in the locker room. Devon House had a tackle for loss. Josh Jones had a tackle for loss. Morgan Burnett had two tackles for loss. Demaryius Randall had a tackle for loss. That's every guy in the secondary almost that matters. They were all playing really well in run support and on those, you know, quick passes out to the flats and things, but anything downfield, it was like a train wreck.
Yeah, it really was.
And so at this point, is there enough talent on that defense, do you think, to win games? Like, I can't decide if it's a schematic issue or if guys are just not as good. I mean, Blake Martinez is everywhere, but is Ha Ha Clinton Dix not as good as people think? You know, is Mike Daniels not as good? Is Morgan Burnett, you know, good enough in terms of being where he needs to be, but not a step enough ahead where he can disrupt enough plays? Mm-hmm. I don't know at this point.
I mean, I've seen this defense play pretty well. I mean, they made it to two NFC championship games.
That's true.
You know, I mean, Rodgers had a lot to do with that. But, you know, in the Seattle championship game, they were pretty good. The only difference between then and this one is Julius Peppers, I guess. So, I don't know. I think that's the assessment that the coaches versus personnel have to make, is and really this comes down to McCarthy. He's the one who has to make the assessment. All right, is it the players or is it the coaches? And, you know, they did all this self-scouting for 2 weeks.
It all sounds really good when you say it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and what comes out of it is a 361-yard passing day. And what's especially disturbing about that is that Detroit seemed to know everything that Green Bay was going to do. So, you know, if you have 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent, you should have some stuff that they can't deal with.
And now they have
one thing.
And now they have a short week to prepare for the Bears.
Yeah, maybe that's better.
I don't even know. Anything else you want to talk about from this game?
Let's see.
How about the Lions not punting one time?
Yeah, that's amazing. And Packers on special teams were pretty blah again. You know, the bad snap on the field goal. They needed 3 points.
And I give Trevor Davis credit for wanting to bring this stuff out,
yeah,
but he cost them a lot of yards today.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, collectively, it was probably close to 20. It was 12 on the first two kick returns alone.
Yeah, it hurt him. I mean, he's trying to make something happen for Hundley, and I don't know whether to rip them for that or to say, what the hell, you might as well.
No, I totally agree with you.
You know, the Packers won the turnover battle, and they still lost by a ton. So I don't know what to think about it, but I do know that they're in trouble. And I think McCarthy has some serious soul-searching to do. One, on his quarterback and how they're going to figure that out, and two, Capers, whether he's going to oversee that, whether he's going to make a change. You know, if he makes a change mid-season, it would be Tuesday morning.
Right.
But I don't know. He's just not that kind of a knee-jerk guy. He's never fired anybody in season. And so I'd be kind of surprised if he did. But he's got people on staff who could do it. You know, it'd be kind of a collective effort.
So let's go through some rapid-fire questions real quick to end this.
Okay.
We'll both answer. Does Mike McCarthy make a change at D coordinator before the season ends? Yes or no?
No.
I say no as well. Does Ted Thompson force McCarthy's hand and make a change at D coordinator before the season ends? Agreed. I say no. Does Mike McCarthy make a change at quarterback before the season ends, whether it's Callahan or somebody else?
Yes.
Okay. And do you think it'll be Callahan?
It'll have to be. I don't think
You don't think they'll sign somebody off the street?
No, a
veteran of some kind that's just sitting out there?
I honestly think they should take a crack at Kaepernick just to see, you know, what does it hurt him to bring him in?
Just stir the pot, Spoon. Yeah. Just stir it up.
You know, I mean, so what, you know, you're going to lose Donatello Brown back to the practice squad if you bring in a third quarterback, you know? I mean, if they were willing to go after Hoyer, they might as well take a look at Kaepernick. If anything, with Kaepernick, you could at least design some plays for him to come in and execute.
Robert Griffin III's out there.
Ugh, no, he's an injury mess.
Yeah, true. I'm trying to find some list of quarterbacks that's out there, or that are out there, excuse me.
I mean, you look at the guys who are playing. Backup quarterback position is terrible in the NFL. I mean, Tom Savage, could you imagine him?
It would not be great.
You know, who else are we talking about? Matt Moore, you know, Hoyer. You know, Belichick, people are screaming about, oh, he would have done great. But I'd like to see what happens if Brian Hoyer is their quarterback.
True.
And see what they do with that terrible defense that they have. You know, Brady's keeping them in it right now. I got to think around, you know.
Joel Stave is a free agent. He could really light things up there.
Sure.
I found a list. Matt Barkley's out there. That wouldn't be too
terrible.
Bad. Yeah. He almost beat the Packers in Chicago last year.
No arm.
Kaepernick, Christian Ponder.
Ugh.
Zach Mettenberger. Sean Hill.
You know, Sean Hill would be really good if he weren't retired. I think he told the Vikings he's done. But he actually isn't a bad quarterback.
Luke McCown, Ryan Nassib, Connor Shaw, Matt Sims.
No.
These are just the names I recognize. There's a bunch more that I don't even recognize.
Yeah.
There's nothing out there.
No.
You know, Tony Romo, but.
Yeah, maybe the guy on the practice squad. What the heck's his name?
Gerard Evans.
Yeah.
I think. Why from not? Virginia Tech.
Sure. Stick him in there and
see
what he can do.
Well, I've got nothing else to say about this game. It was a mess.
Yeah, there's not much else. And really, their season's coming down to this Bears game. So we'll know a lot more then.
And until then, be sure to check all of our coverage on jsonline.com and packersnews.com. We'll have full recaps from the game Monday night that you can read this morning while you listen to this podcast, and then all kinds of stuff leading up to Chicago. So be sure to check out both of those things. And until then, we will talk to you guys soon.